So it is 9:25. We are returning from executive session on complaint 2118. Mr. Carl Lang, we're just going to do a roll call of board members. Dr. Cornwall?
Yeah, here.
Mr. Greer?
Here.
Dr. Bustillo?
Here.
Mr. Clinton?
Here.
Mr. Leone?
Here.
Thank you. Dr. King?
Here.
Dr. Cornwall, the meeting is yours.
Okay, so I'd like to give Mr. Lang a short opportunity to say anything if he'd like. Does any board member, before I do that, does any board member have any more questions for him? All right. So Mr. Lang, would you like to make a closing statement or your lawyer?
I would start with Mr. Lang if he has anything else he wanted to add.
The only thing that I would say is that, like Ms. King, Dr. King had stated, my life hadn't been the typical life as far as a physical therapist goes. I traveled all around in an RV, and then I took off and I backpacked across Europe, $1,500 in my pocket for almost a year. And, then my RV was taken from me, stolen out of Tucson, Arizona. And so there's this crazy turn of events that had occurred. And so my records were not complete, and my memory was not good. But that I'm now nearly 50 years old, live in a house. I do have much better records, a lot more stable. And now I'm the clinic director at a certain clinic and now a clinic owner. I'm very, very different. And I'm sorry that I read the compact question incorrectly. And that's all I can end up saying.
No. Thank you, Mr. Lang.
And Dr. Cornwall, members of the board, all I have to add is I think this is someone who can and would pass the jurisprudence exam if given the opportunity. We're asking for a path forward that will allow Mr. Lang to remain in good standing, allow him to do the things that he needs to do to demonstrate to this board that he can be productive here if he chooses to come into Arizona. And our hope is that an error like this is educational for him. I think it has been. I think just based on what he said and how quickly he responded to the executive director. But we would ask for a path forward here that will allow him to remain in good standing.
All right. So it doesn't appear to be any more questions by the board. So this is an initial review, but we'll have a discussion and try to decide what we do. For board members, what are your thoughts at this point? Or do I have a motion?
This is Josh Greer. I would suggest that we do, consistent with our previous practice in these cases, allow the licensee a chance to withdraw his compact privilege if he chooses to withdraw his compact privilege. Then our practice has been to dismiss the case. If he chooses not to withdraw the compact privilege, then I would move this to a formal hearing. And I make that as a motion.
Second.
All right, we have a motion, we have a second. Any discussion on that? I think that's appropriate given this case is not very dissimilar to what we've dealt with in previous 6 months probably. So any other comments? Let's call the question then, Karen.
The motion before you is to provide an opportunity for Mr. Lang to voluntarily surrender his Arizona compact privilege within 30 days or move to an informal hearing. Dr. Cornwall.
But yes. May I ask a point of clarification? I'm sorry, but the voluntary surrender is a different remedy than a withdrawal, I believe. And so,
so Mr. Greer, would you like to clarify your motion, please?
Mr. Carey, in the past, when we've had these cases, the compact has allowed the licensee or the compact privilege holder to withdraw the However, they do it. The point is, Mr. Lang's not going to have a compact privilege in Arizona, but that's not a revocation and it's not disciplinary. He chooses to apply again. Hopefully next time he takes the jurisprudence exam before he applies, I can, you know, the board has dealt with these cases in a very similar nature. I imagine if the board finds a licensee who fails again to take the jurisprudence exam, they're not going to be as lenient. But that's what happens. And so, you know, we understand the ramifications that the revocation has on a licensee. We're very disappointed in the fact that we have several people who don't read the application very carefully and just check the box. But we're trying to strike a balance here between, you know, the severe professional consequences that arise from this and honest mistakes. We understand those do happen. So, you know, that's the purpose of the motion.
Right, but will you modify your wording to voluntary surrender instead of withdrawal? There is no withdrawal of a compact privilege.
Sure. I don't care what happens as long as he doesn't have it anymore.
Thank you. So the motion before you for complaint 2118, Mr. Carl Lang, physical therapist, is to provide Mr. Lang the opportunity within 30 days to voluntarily surrender his current Arizona compact privilege or move to an informal hearing. Dr. Cornwall?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Dr. Pestillo?
Yes.
Mr. Clinton?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
The motion passes. And I'll be sending that letter to Mr. Lang and to you, Mr. Carey.
Thank you.
All right. So let's move back up on agenda item number 4A, number one, case number 20-08, Ryan Marzetta, physical therapist. And Mr. Marzetta, thank you very much for your patience as we deal with that previous case.
Of course. Good morning.
Dr. Cornwell, members of the board, I'm going to let you know that the complainant NB will not be testifying this morning.
Okay.
Thank you. She has no intention at this point, Ms. Richardson, correct me. She has no intention at this point of being able to testify.
That's correct. She informed me that she would request that the board go ahead and proceed with the matter.
Okay.
We have her recorded testimony. We just didn't have it under oath. I think that was the question. So, but we've had the opportunity to listen to your time with her.
This is a continuation of the case from the June meeting. And so what we're going to do, instead of me reading off the informal script again, we're just going to swear you in, Mr. Marzetta and Mindy. Will you be testifying it? We'll swear the two of you in and then proceed with the case, okay? So if both of you would please raise your right hand. You swear the truth, tell the truth and the whole truth and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Mr. Marzetta?
Yes.
Ms. Richardson?
Yes.
Okay.
Dr. Cornwell?
Ms. Richardson, would you, I'm sorry, Mr. Harris?
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Cornwell, members of the board. If you wouldn't mind, Dr. Cornwell, I believe that both you and Mr. Leone were not present at the June meeting, but it's my understanding that you may have gone back and listened to the proceedings. And can you just confirm that you both have done that so that you would be able to participate in the continuation of the informal hearing today?
Yes, I affirm that I have not only read the notes, but I've listened to the audio portion of the hearing.
Thank you.
Mr. Leone?
Yes, I've also listened to the audio and read through all of the documents.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
Ms. Richardson, could you give us, just since it's been a couple months, just give us a brief overview.
Okay. We received the complaint in May of 2020. The patient NB informed Mr. Marzetta that she could not wear a mask during her physical therapy treatment due to her history of panic attacks, if her mouth and nose was covered, or if her breathing was in any way restricted. NB alleged that Mr. Marzetta caused her to have fear, extreme anxiety, and a panic attack in the course of physical therapy treatment when he placed a towel over her mouth. You had an initial review in April. You moved this to an informal hearing in June. You continued it to today, and the potential allegations that have been cited in the informal hearing brief, with Mr. Marzetta's permission, I'll just read the allegations. ARS 32-2044, engaging in the performance of substandard care by a physical therapist. ARS 32-2044-12, failing to adhere to recognized standards of ethics of the physical therapy profession, cited Principle 1 and Principle 2. ARS 32-2044-A, use of titles. Physical therapist shall use the letter PT in connection with the physical therapist's name. ARS 32-2414, making misleading, deceptive, untrue, or fraudulent representations in violation of this chapter or in the practice of physical therapy. ARS 32-2044-20, and R4 24-304, adequate patient records, failing to maintain adequate records. And finally, ARS 32-2044-22, providing treatment intervention unwarranted by the condition of the patient or treatment beyond the point of reasonable benefit. I think, Mr. Cornwell, are you on mute?
All right. Thank you. Thank you for letting me know. I was on a different screen. So, Mr. Marzette, do you have representation by any chance today?
No, sir.
Okay. I just want to make, is there anyone else that you would like to speak at this hearing?
No, sir.
Okay. Otherwise, I need to square those in as well. Okay. Would you like to make an opening statement?
At this time, no. I don't have anything formally written, and I would like the council here to proceed as you see fit, and to ask me questions, please.
Okay. All right. So let's. Are there any board members who have questions for Mr. Marzetta?
Mr. Marzetta, it's Dr. King. Do you recall patient NB stating to you that she had anxiety and was concerned about anything being placed over her face, including even not being able to wear a face shield?
Yes, ma'am. And that happened on this day in question during treatment. Yes.
Okay.
And that was the first and only time that it had happened. That it had come up.
Do you recall whether she let you know that before you placed something over her face, or was it afterwards?
It was during the time I was working on her thoracic area, okay. Moving up towards between the rhomboids and the scapula. Going, my thinking at this time was. As I recall, she had related numerous times from falling off of horses and other sports injuries over the course of many, many, many years. And that was one of the reasons why therapy was taking as it had taken with NB. And working from the lower lumbar spine going up through the spine, my thinking at this time was NB had taken numerous headshots. With anybody that's taken severe spills, how can you not? And my logical progression was at this point was, with what she was just then relating, with what she NB was just then relating at this time, that I was considering the possibility that NB would also benefit from treatment in NB's neck, going right up into her mandible. With the concern that NB had sustained numerous headshots from all the injuries she had related. And that at that and that had I found anything up within the neck going into the mandible, and going quite possibly cranially, that then it would be my duty with which to contact NB's provider, nurse practitioner, to then get treatment for NB's condition up there. So I was looking for a response from NB in the same manner that I had looked to get a response from NB's the rest of the rest of her back, the rest of her body, that we had worked on previously. It was nothing new. I was surprised at the later response that NB had related for that session had ended at that time, with NB asking with which to not proceed, continuing going up into the neck and into the mandible. And I stopped. I did, and I allowed her to rest like every other single time. The process, NB's response was rather routine, and we allowed NB to, and I allowed NB to continue to rest in the room until NB felt ready with which to leave, and she left under her own accord. And NB never related that that NB was in any more distress than the previous treatment sessions, which there were numerous treatment sessions that were very difficult for NB due to the deep muscle releases that we were working on. Therapy with NB was not necessarily an easy thing. It wasn't, and I surmise simply due to the numerous athletic style injuries that NB had sustained over the course of her lifetime.
Do you think, and you were looking for a particular response, would it have been possible to see the response you were looking for with her face uncovered, or did it require covering in order for you to, you know, like I'm trying to put together the covering of her face and the response that you were looking for?
Sure. Now understand, as we had discussed in the previous meeting, my method with which to approach and treat people is usually with which to place a towel or a pillowcase that's usually already there anyway due to hot packs and such. And this was a procedure that NB had gotten used to. I assume that NB had gotten used to over the numerous treatments. So I was rather going on the routine and the hope that the process that we had been engaged in numerous times through numerous therapy sessions was what NB was comfortable with, that NB was what felt would be regular and NB would felt to be expected. I rather didn't consider with which to not do that, simply because of all the previous sessions was how we worked together.
Thank you. So basically what you're saying is this, the process that you were going through with her on that day was not any different than the process you had done with her in previous treatments. Nothing was new, nothing was out of the ordinary as far as covering her. Okay.
Correct.
Thank you.
Sort of related to that, this is Dr. Cornwall. Sort of related to that is that when when we conducted an interview with her, with Ms. Richardson, the timeline she provides for that is different than what you just related. So she said that you had just finished working on her thoracic region. She was lying in the prone position, and that you had her come on her back.
Correct.
And told her to take a rest. And as you left the room, you put the towel over her face. You're telling me that is not what happened, and that she is mistaken.
If I believe correctly, we went directly from prone to supine. I was in the room the entire time. It was a natural progression. The rest was, in all likelihood, a momentary a point with which to allow NB just to get accustomed from changing positions. But the progression in going from her thoracic spine up into her cervical spine there was a bit of a discussion there. You know, let's proceed to the next section of the back.
Okay, so she also mentions that another person, a tech or somebody, came in and found her and asked her if she was okay, and then went and got you.
That was so. Okay, so in this progression here, that once the tower roll was for very momentarily had gone from up into her neck and over her mandible, and she quickly reached up, placed it off. I had asked, you know, shall we continue into the sternocleidomastoid area and so forth? And I didn't realize she was undergoing an anxiety attack at that point. Her response was just rather similar and routine from all the other responses on how therapy had went. She began to tear up. And I asked, you know, would you like to, you know, stop for this session, which had happened in previous sessions. There were some sessions beforehand where the person had enough for that day and they would like to just rest for the rest of the time, which I allowed her to. And I had said to NB, as we had done previous times, you know, go ahead and stay in the room. I'll be in the next room over. We'll check on you. And that's what had happened. So the tech was continuously checking in on NB just to make sure NB was okay and letting me know immediately as I was in the next room until NB was ready with which to get up in her own accord and leave the clinic.
Okay. And so again, you said that the towel or sheet was placed over her mandible.
Correct. Yes.
But she indicates that it was over her entire face.
I don't recall that. I certainly recall over the mandible, no question about that. I do not recall over the nose and the eyes.
Okay, and so that had to be over the mandible in order for you to treat the mandible. Is that
no? But please understand that my attempt at this point was with which to see if treating if her condition was somewhat dealing with her previous back injuries extending up into the cervical area, into the mandible. And if I were to have found anything, I would have contacted her nurse practitioner, okay, with which to discuss it with Ms. Coyle and ask for a referral to continue therapy up into this area.
So, now, that part I understand about trying to figure out whether or not the mandible is part of it. What correct. I don't understand is how that towel sheet over the mandible or face figures into it.
Again, Mr. Cornwell, it has to do with the regularity with which that the working with NB and I, we had come to that NB was used to my placing either a large towel or using a pillowcase on the various aspects of her body when therapy would continue.
Okay, but this is the first time you've done anything that would require that to be over the face, correct?
Absolutely, correct. But again,
this was after the fact that she told you that she couldn't tolerate anything over the face.
Correct, yes.
Okay, so again, why did you do that? If you knew that she couldn't tolerate it over the face, why did you put it over the face?
Well, because as I had asked her, shall we continue up into the neck area? I did not ask, this is my fault. I did not ask her, should it be okay with which to place the pillowcase up into the area that I was looking with which to ascertain to see if we should have a discussion with the nurse practitioner to continue therapy in this area. Correct.
Okay. So if you said, let's go on to the neck.
Yes.
She probably would have said, okay, as long as you don't put anything over my neck, over my face, I'm good.
That is my fault. Absolutely.
Okay.
Correct. So again, right. I was going on routine and the familiarity and the presumption. I made a presumption that that NB would have been okay with the continuation of the same style and approach. Correct. I was surprised. I was really surprised. I really was. I was actually expecting a where the sternocleidomastoid and the platysma, because there's been a few times in my career where that's been the case when somebody's taken headshots, there's something gets jammed all up and through here and it creates a pulling effect onto the head. My thinking was that this was exactly what was going to be the case right here. I was wrong. I was wrong.
Well, it sounds like you probably underestimated her anxiety attack.
Absolutely.
Or the possibility of an, even though she told you she could not tolerate it, you underestimated that.
Yes, sir. Yes.
All right. I have other questions, but does any other board member have something they'd like to ask Mr. Rosetta?
I have a question in regards to just the documentation for that day. With everything that's being explained as far as rationale for the treatment, I'm kind of curious into your rationale for leaving a lot of that aspect out of the documentation for that visit. From my review of it, all I really see in the assessment was tolerated treatment well with MOD verbal cues for Therex, but nothing in relation to what was going on in regards to what we're talking about right now.
That's my fault. That was poor documentation on my part. Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. And then additionally, I saw that an incident report was written on that same day, May 5th, relating to the incident. So, you know, that was something I was kind of curious about was this something that you guys viewed as more of an incident report type of deal as opposed to being part of the actual treatment? And then I also noticed in the incident report that it specifies that that's the last communication you had with NB. And I wanted to see if you can clarify what you actually mean by that. Because when I read that, I get the impression that you're saying that's the last time you communicated with her without really knowing that, you know, she didn't want to come back to treatment at that point. So if you can just kind of clarify what your thoughts were when you wrote that statement.
Well, considering the surprise of the whole situation, my bosses considered it to be prudent with which to write up an incident report. And I, within that incident report, I wrote that that was at that point the last time that we had communicated, in that NB did not come back. I wondered if it was going to happen, if NB was going to come back later that afternoon with which to clarify what had happened at therapy earlier that day. This is somewhat of a rather neighborhood clinic, and people do drop in and out throughout the course of the day with therapies. It's something that, you know, has you know, people letting us know how therapy went earlier that day. I was rather hoping this would have been the case, and it wasn't. I was surprised. I really was. And considering the number of months we had worked together, and I had worked with her family also, I rather thought I did that NB was going to personally contact me. I had hoped that she would have. I really would have liked to, even to this day. But that's just not the case. So does that help?
Yeah. Thank you for the clarification on that.
Mark, you're on mute.
I've done it again. All right. So you've mentioned that your documentation is not good for particularly this visit or this client. My next question is do you think your documentation for this case is representative or exceptional?
At the time, representative, yes.
So that sounds like you've had poor documentation for some time.
Yeah, yes, it's something that I've been looking to remedy immediately since all this happened. Yes.
Have you taken any documentation classes? Okay.
No, all right. Sir.
All right. And let's see, you saw NB for quite a few visits. So, and I'm not sure, I didn't add up the, I'm guessing over several months, right?
Yeah, about 13, yeah.
About 13 months?
No, about 6 months. But 14 over about a 6 month period.
Okay. And but your documentation indicates that there's little or no change in her, in the assessment, so to speak, or right. the treatments. Now, she says that you were doing wonderful things and she really liked and it was helpful. But after 14 visits and she's not changing, doesn't that kind of ring a little bell saying, I need to do something that's more long lasting, or there's something that needs to be evaluated by a different practitioner? Or because right now it seems, right now, if you go on documentation only, yep. it looks like you overtreated her.
Yes. Okay.
So did she have a home exercise program?
We went over exercises. NB was a situation where NB would do whatever physically, even though NB would be in pain throughout the course of her daily life. And the therapy that I looked to employ that I considered was working, albeit slowly, was the deep muscle tissue releases. But as far as anything profoundly functional, that didn't necessarily change. It was, everything would just get a little easier and a little easier. And part of the frustration of the whole situation was the considerable amount of in-between time with all the treatments.
That's where I think some type of a self-management program would have been very, very helpful. Mm. Not knowing NB, I don't know what that program would look like, but it also looks like you kept doing essentially the same treatments every time she visited. Correct. Which means yes. that they helped her, but very short term, and you kind of were starting over every time she came in.
That was somewhat the case at times. Yeah, yes, sir.
Did you ever have one of those hard conversations with yes. NB saying, you know what, you are your worst enemy right now because you keep doing things that bring you back to stage one?
But Mr. Cornwell, please understand that when these conversations come up, very often somebody coming to therapy, the trade-off is that they might not come to therapy at all. And that's something I don't want. I want to be able to help somebody as best as possible, even if it would be once a month. It's a struggle. It's a struggle. It's a struggle. I don't know how to, I can't enforce somebody's free will to do what I think is best for them. But at the same time, I don't want to cut anybody loose. I certainly don't.
You know? I understand that, but you know, that's why you're getting paid the big bucks. I mean, if somebody goes into kidney failure and they don't change their lifestyle, they don't give them a kidney.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's not quite the same analogy.
I understand. Okay?
But if you can't get her to understand that she's invested in her own condition and that she needs to work with you to find a solution, then you're not really helping her.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Anybody else? One last thing, and I'll be quiet. I'm curious, how long have you been a licensed therapist in Arizona?
This is actually my second time around. I was relicensed in the springtime of 2017, or maybe at the end of the winter of 2017. I was
So last 4 years.
Yes, sir.
And then at some time previous to that, right?
2008 to 2010. Yes. Whereas I moved back to Rhode Island, where I'm from, and then I moved back here in the springtime of 2017.
Okay, so when you came back in 2017, roughly, you had to get relicensed, right? Yes. Did you take the jurisprudence exam at that point?
Yes, sir.
So where did you get the idea that you can still sign your notes MPT? Because we haven't allowed that for a long time. Is that just force of habit?
That was partly force of habit, yes, sir. I obviously didn't read the jurisprudence as succinctly as I should have. And I went by what had been done previously for it's the same clinic that I had left in 2010.
Well, now that makes me worried, because if you didn't read the jurisprudence that succinctly, what else did you miss? And what else have you done based on what you used to do and not what you're supposed to do? So that's kind of where I'm at. What other board members have questions, if any? Anybody want a discussion, a motion?
You would have to have Mr. Marizada do a closing statement before you move into.
Okay, that's a good idea. All right. Would you like to make a closing statement?
Yes, sir. Thank you for listening to this today. And I'm really hoping with which to resolve this and move forward. I'm still, a bit upset that this had happened with NB. I wish it hadn't. I was surprised that this had happened. And I would hope that that NB would find with herself, some resolution with this also.
All right. Thank you. All right. We are in discussion. And Mr. Marzetta, this is an open meeting discussion. So we probably won't have any questions for you, but just sit there and you can listen.
Thank you.
So, discussion by the board.
So, I do feel that it was very insensitive of Mr. Marzetta to place the towel over MB's face. However, she was able to lie prone, and therein lies my issue with her face is partially covered in that prone position. So I struggle with this. Supine is definitely a more vulnerable position. I understand that. And I don't know if you can ever anticipate anyone's level of anxiety in any particular day. I do believe people with chronic conditions and chronic pain are probably a little bit different than the nice, episodic acute or subacute care type of a patient. And I do feel like we're getting more and more and more people in the outpatient setting that want to use us very much on their own schedule. She goes in, she has a treatment, she feels better, so she doesn't come back for a few weeks until she doesn't feel as good. And, it's similar to chiropractic treatment at that point. And that's something that we all struggle with our people who do this with us. I do believe it was grossly insensitive. I believe there's a number of infractions that have occurred with this case, but I do struggle with the initial presentation and complaint.
Karen, it's Kelly. I share your thoughts on that as well. I think that Mr. Marzetta should have talked her through exactly what he was going to do. Even gotten verbal consent before he placed something over her face. I think that sometimes that we just do what we normally do and not think about, actually walking the patient through it. I'm having a hard time connecting just truly knowing what I know about panic and anxiety disorder, she had a history of it. Panic can happen at any, honestly, out of nowhere. Could have been related to the thing over her face. Maybe not. We don't know what else was going on in her day and her life at that point. I agree with you. For me, as I'm reading the case and I'm reading the documentation, my biggest concern is about his documentation, and actual practice, in documenting his findings and connecting the dots between findings, plan of care, and goals. So I would lean toward something along the lines of really making sure that his documentation is in line with what the expectation is for even minimum standards in the state.
Mr. Clinton, do you have any thoughts on at this point?
Yeah, I would think for, as a public member, I see the treatment of patients over a long period of time where they're getting better at a particular treatment, but long term they're not really making any progress, is something that the profession, it's hard as a practitioner, I think, to step in and say, sorry, you're not making any progress, even though you feel better, you leave feeling good. I see it as something very difficult. My impression of physical therapists over the years are that they are caring and want to fix people. I mean, I don't think any of you would be in the profession if you didn't have those two attributes. And that keeping the patient and with the hope that she'll get better, or just when she walks out feeling better, I could see that being very difficult for a practitioner to say, I don't care that you leave my office feeling better, but long term you're not making real gains, so we have to stop treatment. Because there was progress at that one treatment, you encourage the patient feels better and you want to continue. And I see that as a real hard place for practitioners to draw the line. And that's because, you guys want to make people feel better. You want to fix the person that walks in the door.
Mr. Greer, what are your thoughts?
I share a lot of the same thoughts as Karen and Ms. King, Dr. Bustillo and Dr. King. I really wish we could have heard from the patient on this one. We continued this to hear from the patient. I really wish we could have. Some of what the licensee says doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but I'm not going to believe some unsworn statements about in compared with the doctor's, the licensee's statements. So those are my thoughts.
Okay. Mr. Leone, you're new, but do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, my thoughts are pretty similar to Dr. King in that my biggest concern has more to do with the lack of documentation justifying, why she continued to receive treatment over a long period of time without showing the actual results of it. I can completely understand continuing to treat somebody, when you're seeing these little bits of progress that might be making them be able to get through a week or two, of their lifestyle. But I think the bottom line is we have to be documenting that type of stuff. So that really is my bigger concern right now, is just ensuring that that's understood and that there really is going to be, you know, a remediation of trying to, you know, figure out what is it that needs to be in that documentation to show that progress and show that rationale as to why you're continuing to treat someone.
Okay. So we need to tell Mr. Leone that his job in filling Peggy Hunter's role is to disagree with everything that I say.
And we'll cut you some slack because it's your first meeting. But yes, that's your role. Okay.
I have to coach you a little bit.
Sounds good.
Yes, I've treated patients in my career where I've shown they feel better, but next time I see them, they're back to where they started from. And I've always felt like, okay, I'm halfway there. I've got something that works, but it's so short term that I haven't finished the job. Mm-hmm. And that's where, and sometimes I would agree that sometimes it can't, you know, because of all sorts of situations, both life and the patient and stuff, but I always considered that just the job is only half done if I make you feel better today, but not tomorrow. So, unless there's any more comments or discussion, does anyone have a motion? We can start with the findings of fact.
Or you may want to start with conclusions of law to see if they all pertained before you go for findings of fact. Your choice.
Yeah, I was trying to pull it up. To have the actual.
And maybe before we go there, is this even disciplinary? Is this not disciplinary?
I think there's a tendency to focus in on the towel over the face. And I tend to focus. It's not a non-issue, but I think the fact that his documentation is very poor, and he's agreed that it's poor, and he said that was fairly representative of what he's been doing. And so, in my mind, that is disciplinary.
I would. I can certainly see where you're coming from, Dr. Cornwall, on that. I would tend to be a little bit on a different side of that and really focus more on potentially non-disciplinary and really look at education for this man.
Education, I think, would be part of it. if he had said, no, I usually document pretty good, but this one kind of sent me for a loop, and so I didn't do as good a job as I usually do, then I'd say, okay, let's continue and add non-disciplinary, that'd be good. But he says, no, this is fairly representative. And so I would say we need to make sure that he does make changes in his documentation, which means monitoring. And that then, I don't think we can do non-disciplinary.
And contrary to that, Dr. Cornwall, I think this injury wasn't caused, or this patient complaint wasn't caused by poor documentation. And so why I see this is, yes, the documentation is bad. Yes, we would have known about it, but for this complaint, but that's not what caused the patient's complaint here. And so I would be inclined to do, you know, some documentation continuing education as opposed to a disciplinary sanction.
So if I got stopped for speeding, but they found something else in my car that was illegal, they would just ignore that because I wasn't stopped for that?
Well, I think the analogy is if you got caught stopped for speeding, they found something else that was in your car that was illegal, and now the speeding issue is not as big a deal. You know, maybe they look at it differently here. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not saying... You know, I'm not trying to excuse his poor documentation, but, you know, in looking and crafting a remedy here, you know, I'm inclined, and maybe this is the way to do it. Maybe I just move to reorder non-disciplinary continuing education, 12 hours in area of documentation and record keeping to complete it within 6 months. See if I get a second, then we can vote on it.
I'll second your motion, Josh.
I hope you were. You were nodding as I was talking.
All right. So we have a motion. And we have a second. Yeah. All right. To do non-disciplinary continuing education in the area of documentation and
record keeping
in general. Okay. So discussion about the motion.
Well, I feel that if his documentation is as poor as it seems, without some type of follow-up monitoring, how do we know he makes improvements? I mean, it's not like it's borderline and he wasn't maybe consistent. This was pretty bad, and he admitted that this is how he documents. So I think that we need some type of monitoring afterwards to make sure that what he learns in the documentation course sticks.
I agree. I don't think we can require monitoring as a non-disciplinary order.
You can't.
So
rationale, we would want to do monitoring on everyone. We're never going to know, except we have a professional who apparently was misguided in his documentation. Hopefully he learned something and we never see him again. That's the point. I don't think we need to monitor everyone. I think we need to monitor really, really egregious cases. And I don't think this falls into this one for the record keeping.
Well, I agree that we should not do monitoring on everybody. It basically comes down to, do I trust that he will actually make the changes that are necessary in his documentation? I don't have enough information to even answer that question, except he said that for some time now, his documentations have looked like they are that we saw with this case. And that makes me very untrusting that he would make the changes. And that's why I would want monitoring. But if this was something where I go, yeah, this looks like a one-time deal, I don't think we need to do monitoring.
I see both sides of the coin on this for sure. I think discussion is kind of swaying me more towards a non-disciplinary approach here with the documentation requirements and not the monitoring. My feeling is that he doesn't want this experience to happen to him ever again, and he's going to go out of his way to make sure that it doesn't.
I would agree with that as well. Keeping it a non-disciplinary, more of an education-based plan. One thing I would be curious to see if we can do as well is, can we not just include the documentation education, but maybe some sort of like patient sensitivity type education as well?
I missed that last part. Could you repeat it?
Yeah, I wanted to see if maybe we could potentially modify the motion to also include some sort of patient sensitivity education.
Josh, you're on mute.
I'm happy to modify that to add that. I'm not familiar of a patient sensitivity course that we've ever ordered before. Karen, is that something we've ever done?
I don't know one offhand. It doesn't mean one doesn't exist. I just don't know one offhand.
Would it be, there are plenty would it be more in line with maybe informed consent? We might be more inclined to see something on the lines of training in the area of dynamic informed consent, which I think you've mentioned.
Yeah. Or ethics. Place. There are plenty of ethics courses out there as well.
I was thinking something that covers the, something that would relate a little bit closer to this scenario.
I think something along the lines of ethics, like you were saying, Karen, I think something in that area would probably capture what you're trying to find here, Giovanni.
Yeah, that would be excellent.
Mr. Leon, in finding consensus, could we do 6 hours of record keeping, 6 hours of ethics, and 6 hours of informed consent?
I'm not sure you can find 6 hours of just uninformed consent, but it would probably be wrapped up into some ethics. So I don't know if you want to maintain the 12 hours with documentation and just add 6 hours of ethics, or if you want to split it all out.
I would be fine with that.
Yeah.
Okay, but you're the maker of the motion.
I know, and so I would move to amend them. I guess I'm going to amend the motion subject to Dr. King's approval to add 6 hours of ethics.
Dr. King, you're the second. Do you agree to the amendment?
I do agree.
Okay, so the motion before you, just to keep you in discussion, is a non-disciplinary order for 12 hours related to documentation, 6 hours related to ethics, all to be completed within 6 months, with the assumption that these courses still continue to be completed online.
All right, so everybody understand the motion. Any further discussion? Do you have enough information that you feel like you can vote on the motion? Karen, let's call.
So the motion before you for complaint 2008, Ryan Marzetta, PT, is to issue a non-disciplinary order for 12 hours specific to documentation, 6 hours specific to ethics, all to be completed within 6 months, and these courses can be performed online. Dr. Cornwall?
No.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Clinton?
No.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
The motion passes.
All right. Mr. Marzetta, thank you very much for participating. The staff will be sending you a letter. If you have any questions, you can deal with them.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Good. Ms. Donahue, do you need to stop the recording and restart?
Well, that's not a bad idea. We'll just take a momentary pause.
Dr. Donahue, can we take maybe a 2 minute, 3 minute break?
Let's take an 8 minute break to 10:30.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Okay, we're all right. So we're on break.
Okay, stopping the recording at 10:22.